FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. It's Carrie Lutz, and the date is November 24th, 2015. You've been watching Bitcoin lately. You've been watching the metals, probably scratching your head about Bitcoin and the metals. And my old friend Don Harold is with us. You know him well. Don, you were a former host of the Day Trade Show. You were on YouTube before just about anyone else in the space. And it is great to have you back on.
Well, thanks, Carrie. Glad to be here.
Hey, so you had a call a couple of weeks ago, I guess it was maybe a month now, on Bitcoin that proved to be nothing short of prescient.
Well, actually, I think what you're referring to maybe is the buy that I made on Bitcoin at 188, and that was, I think, in January. But timing aside, I just got lucky. I don't take too much credit. It's just pure stupid luck.
It was more than just luck here. Come on. When you're that right, granted, timing, hey, we're all not perfect when it comes to timing, but look, it doubled from there. Now it's pulled back to around 323, but you're still well in the black here. And that was after yet another exchange got raided.
Well, okay. First, let me talk about getting things right and getting things wrong. When the first time I heard about Bitcoins, I could have piled in with, a lot of money and became a billionaire. Not only did I not do that, but none of the Bitcoin proponents that I hear talking Bitcoins up must have done that either, because if I'd have made the billions of dollars they could have, I certainly wouldn't be out there on the talk show circuit. But I didn't buy when I could have at the very beginning. So the rightest right of all would have been the person who bought then. Most people can say that. I think that then when Bitcoins made the initial move to 30, now this is back, I guess, 4 years ago or so. I mean, the first push up, there was a host of pundits on YouTube that were pounding the table and buying Bitcoin as it went to 30. And this is the very first time it made that first initial spike. And I was, along with a couple other folks out there, saying, listen, I wouldn't touch it. You can't buy it, et cetera. And I think a lot of people misread it. I don't know if they really got the flavor of what I was saying then. My comment then was simply the same thing that I'd say about anything that's making a parabolic move. You can't buy a parabolic move like that. And then it collapsed. Oddly enough, some of the biggest proponents of Bitcoin became silent during the collapse, which I always find fascinating when that happens. But no, I didn't buy on that collapse and it came back down to a dollar. So I wasn't right there. Then when Bitcoins went from a dollar to 12, then I made a call that I thought Bitcoins would double. And boy, I'd have felt like a genius if I'd have bought that, because they went from 12 to 1200. So it didn't just double. But no, I didn't buy any Bitcoins then either. So see, I can't claim that was spectacular. And then when they went to 1200, I thought you shouldn't buy them, because the same sort of parabolic, vein that you see in a lot of these things. And so finally, I made a purchase at 188 or 190 on, I guess, January something. And the reason why is, frankly, it seemed like the doom and the gloom was so severe in the Bitcoin community. And so many people were throwing in the towel. The media was piling on and all of that. And, oh, by the way, it was down 1,000 points. So in all honesty, I'm just trying to be as straight with you as I can. I was prepared for it to go to zero. Could have gone to zero. I could have been totally wrong, but it didn't. And I would say, again, it was just more luck than anything else and waiting for other people to get negative. And also watching for a disastrous 1,000-point pullback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people.
So that's there was no. I just want to be clear. There was no fundamental. I wasn't picking it up because it was you know, some sort of magic money. I just felt like for all the reasons that I would normally look at for a trade, it just seemed to be there. So after missing every other golden opportunity, I finally got one.
Yeah. And what do you think about the future of Bitcoin as this competitive currency? You think it's real, or we just kind of deceiving ourselves here?
Oh, well, no. I mean, I've had these discussions with you before. Anything can be money. I mean, anybody can call anything they want money. We know that for the last 100 years, Federal Reserve System has been called money. So I think it's pretty clear that. And a lot of people, Carrie, will say, well, the reason why Bitcoins will never be money or seen as official money is because they're such a bad idea and no one's that dumb and all that. And every time I hear someone say that, I go, well, how many of you thought the Federal Reserve System was a good idea? I mean, regardless of whether it's a good idea or not, I don't see what that makes any difference. In terms of whether or not Bitcoins are going to be the money, Jamie Dimon, I think, said recently that he can't see any government adopting Bitcoins and allowing them to be. I think he mentioned something about even passing laws or something like that to where that they wouldn't be legal to use, although you may want to fact check me on that. But as I've said from the very beginning, Bitcoins are the architecture. They are the archetype. I've said this from the beginning, and I'll say it again. I don't care whether you like Bitcoins or not. Philosophically, you may be completely, totally opposed to them, but that technology isn't going anywhere. Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, Morgan Stanley, Blythe Masters.
I know.
Blythe Masters. I mean, Blythe Masters. What kind of Bitcoin proponent who says that these are the money of the little people do you have to be to ignore Blythe Masters?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. The bankers are so involved in this. Here's one for you, and I bet you didn't know this. Are you familiar with a company called Zappo?
Zappos. Yes, I am familiar with them. I think got bought out by somebody not too long ago, right?
Okay, well, if you go to xapo.com, xapo, anybody listening can go do this, and go to zappo.com. This is a Bitcoin company where you can buy and sell Bitcoins, and they've got some wallet and a cold storage and some technology I don't understand. But I'll give you a dollar, Carrie, of old worthless fiat if you can tell me who their number one advisor is, because you won't believe it.
I'll bet it's either Blythe Masters or, I'm looking at it now. They raised $40 million from Benchmark, Greylock Partners, Index Ventures, Fortress Investment Group, Ribbit Capital, and Emergent Capital Partners. So,
but go to their advisors. There's a picture of the guy, and it ought to make anyone who thinks, anybody who ever debated me on the topic of whether or not this was or was not for the little guy, answer me this. Why is that guy their advisor? Have you got that? They've gotten to him talking about?
I'm looking. Larry Summers. Wow.
The former Treasury Secretary of the United States of America.
And John Reed, former CEO of Citibank. And
that's right.
Guy D. Hawk, who is founder of Visa. Wow.
That's right. So all of this commentary about Bitcoins and the money for the little people and all that. I mean, can we just seriously? I mean, when you've got Blythe Masters,
yeah,
former Treasury Secretaries, Citigroup, Morgan Stanley, I mean, New York Stock Exchange. I mean, what more? Seriously, what more do people need to see about this to figure this out?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, certainly there's a lot of movers and shakers behind it. So obviously it's not what it was made out to be, right?
I tried to tell folks, but of course, I didn't understand the technology. That was what I heard a lot of. I didn't understand the technology. In fact, that's probably one of the real strong suits for those who believe the architecture and all that I'm talking about, that because nobody understands it, it's just like anything else. Because no one understands it, you can be sure that it's going to be embedded very deeply.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Well, hey, it's obviously hit the mainstream now. And where is it going to go from here, though? Adoption? Still a very small, narrow adoption rate. I mean, Overstock.com takes it. I think Apple started taking it again. But there's a lot of companies that don't take it. And
well, they don't, but wait, I got to correct you. They don't really take it. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Overstock doesn't take Bitcoins. Apple doesn't take Bitcoins. What they do is, and I debated Trace Mayer on this and others, what they're doing is they're allowing you to come to their websites and then purchase something, quote, in Bitcoins, but it's immediately exchanged through like a Bitcoin exchange into cash.
Right.
You're not seeing, you know, Apple sitting on Bitcoins and riding the wave of the future. You know, that's not what's going on. By the way, the ride the wave of the future, that's for those of us old enough to remember, that's from the Stewart commercials from Ameritrade back in the day.
Yeah.
Riding the wave of the future. But they're not taking Bitcoins. They're allowing you to use your Bitcoins and immediately exchange them into cash. I'm still looking forward to the day, or when I say forward, I'm just literally in the strictest definition of that. I'm looking into the future. When will the day be that you have a merchant say, you know what, we're simply going to accept Bitcoins? Now, there are some precious metals retailers who will do that. I can name a couple. And they are philosophically aligned with Bitcoins. But even those, and I've interviewed some of those folks on my old YouTube channel, even those folks exchange immediately into cash. And by cash, I mean Federal Reserve notes, except for a very small portion of the Bitcoins that they hold. So it's still not something that corporate America is using for anything more than allowing people the de facto use of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we got a ways to go here. It's not really, it's a medium of exchange, but that's it. The people, then the big companies basically just get rid of it, or they never have it. Effectively, they interface exchange.
That's good. That's what they never have it. Right.
Mm-hmm. But hey, it's like, it's as if you had euros and they have a way of doing it with euros. I guess the difference is they'll ordinarily hold on to euros. You know, they'll accept the payment in euros and they might get rid of them later, but they do have the euros at some point. So this is rather unique.
Well, I mean, the other thing about Bitcoins is that Bitcoins, people don't understand that when you hear the idea that Bitcoins are going to replace fiat money. Well, Bitcoins have their value. And this is always perplexing when I hear people talk about this. They say, well, it's replacing the current money paradigm. Bitcoins are valued in every exchange around the world, not in bushels of wheat or sacks of, you know, doubloons or gallons of milk. They are exchanged every day for dollars, for euros. And so when you buy a Bitcoin, you're literally saying, here, take my money, my dollars, in exchange for this thing. And the counterpart of that trade is taking the dollars out and putting it into whatever they're putting it into. And Bitcoins are simply a vessel in which dollars or euros or whatever are going into. Now, that is not in and of itself money. It is a carrier for money. It is a ledger of a transaction for money, not money in and of itself. Now, if you want to, again, if you'll tell me that tomorrow morning you can pay your taxes or you can go to the grocery store or whatever, and they'll just flat out take your Bitcoins. Well, now we've moved to a different. And I think that Bitcoin proponents would say, well, that day is coming.
Yeah.
But if that day is coming, it's certainly it's a ways off for that to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. You know, it's a paradigm shift for most of you out there using Bitcoins. I mean, I set up my own little wallet. I think I got $100 worth of Bitcoins. Listener out there sent me a tenth of a Bitcoin, and I know how it works, but I just haven't really gotten that into it yet. You know, as far as an investment goes, it's iffy to me. As far as an alternate currency, I'm not convinced about it. you know, there's a lot of question marks, mainly because it's new, right? It's new and it's different.
Well, I mean, it's such a I don't even know how many ways we can talk about this, but the one thing I want people to do who are very excited about the idea of competing currencies is I would just really ask them to read Federalist Paper number 44 and look at what the founders felt about competing currencies and why they felt that the way they did. I would ask you to look at Article 1, Section 8 in the United States Constitution, Article 1, Section 10, and recognize not just what they said, but look in context about why they said it. I would ask you to look at what Thomas Jefferson said about paper currencies. And that he wasn't against paper currencies. What was he against? Thomas Jefferson said.
Banks.
And he was against bank-issued paper currency. And there's a famous quote about paper money being the ghost of money. But if you look at that quote in context and read, for example, Jefferson's letter to J.W. Epps in 1813, you'll see that Jefferson was talking about paper currency issued by banks, not paper currency issued from the Congress, which he called, I'm using Jefferson's words here, a holy endeavor, H-O-L-Y, holy endeavor. And there's this, you know, idea that it's paper currency that's the problem, and this idea that we need a bunch of competing currencies. The reason why people believe that we need competing currencies is because of what's happened for the last 100 years. And when you look at Bitcoins, I mean, outside of technology, which I'm not well versed on, the thing that I would ask people to consider is, hey, why is it that J.P. Morgan, Blythe Masters specifically, and Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley and all these banks, why they all get involved? Why is it former Treasury Secretary? I mean, now, hold on. Listen, Kerry, you know, you've been listening to me, you know, sort of bloviate on this for a long time. Mm-hmm. Who did you hear say this before I did, that the bankers were in love with Bitcoins? Who did you hear say this? Who did you hear say that you can't be afraid of something that has all the hallmarks of the things that you should love and you can control, et cetera?
Yeah.
And yet here we are. Here we are today, former Treasury Secretary. So I would just say to people that on both sides of this issue, if you think Bitcoins are going away, you can't have something disappear when the former Treasury Secretary is involved, right? And for those of you who think it's a fantastic idea for the little guy, really?
Yeah.
Is that what the bankers normally are looking for? And so anyway, the futures, I don't want to go long on this. I'm probably boring the death out of you and everybody else. I just don't know what the future holds for Bitcoins. Maybe it is the answer for everyone's problems. It may possibly be. If so, it will have to cross many bridges that I think are going to be problematic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hey, I agree. I mean, it's got a long ways to go. So what about precious metals? What are you seeing in that market? Any hope for the long-suffering holders?
No, absolutely there's hope. Absolutely there is. I mean, look, it is passe and extremely old news to say you should have been selling in 2011 and 12 and 13 and even in 14 at some point. Yeah. That's old news. So to pound that doesn't make anybody any money. Except I would say to folks, and I'm being totally serious about this, please, please, the next time you see a chart straight up and hitting new highs every day, and everyone around you is piling in, and even Jim Cramer himself is saying it's a great time to buy something, I'm asking some of y'all just to consider the options. just think about what another idea might be.
Yeah.
There's our history lesson. Going forward, my target was 17.5. From 17.5 to 12.5 was a box. So if people have watched my videos, they've seen me draw this box ad nauseum. Well, we're in that box. I think that historically, we may see prices dip below the bottom end of the box, but I certainly believe that outside of this box to the upside, we're going to see prices again. I could give you a long dissertation on why I believe it, but I think that making buys now, not just from a technical standpoint, but from a fundamental standpoint, make a lot of sense. And I think that the sentiment right now, especially from the folks that were so bullish at the top, has got to be a sign. I mean, the negativity, I see articles on a consistent basis with the very people driving folks in on the move up are now talking about. I saw an article the other day, quote, "Can the Fed drive silver prices to zero?" Wow.
Well, that's something.
Zero.
That's something you want to see.
Zero. Please write more articles like that. Yeah. Please, please tell me some more about these falling prices. The sentiment is so negative. In fact, it's unbelievable. Something I told people 5 years ago has come true. I said, you'll know when I'm buying. It's when everyone now, the laughing and the backpacking and the chuckling has turned into tears and people angry and blaming, you know, bankers and all that. Well, I'll be buying. So
here we are.
I'm buying.
Here we are.
I mean, you know, I'm telling you right now, the stuff I bought at 17 and a half is obviously underwater. And anything that I bought at 14 and a half is going to be underwater and is underwater unless prices have moved this morning. I don't know where they are. And if we get to 12 and a half, I'm going to be underwater. In the same way, I was never getting the top on the way up in 2011. I'm darn sure not getting the bottom on the way down. Mm-hmm. You want to buy, newsflash, when people are sad and prices are going lower. And everyone's talking about the end and people are saying they can't take any more pain. I'm reading stories about stackers. I read a story about someone the other day, an older guy who said he can't take any more pain because he might not live long enough to get out from underwater.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, listen, I'm sorry about that. I hate that. It makes me sick to my stomach. But when you see these sorts of stories, then you might not be at the bottom, which I'm not saying we are. But like I said in 2011 on the way up, if I'm not selling now, when would I? And on the way down, if I'm not buying now, when would I? If we get to 5, which is theoretically possible, or 1, okay, the way I'm buying, my average price will be at 10. And if my average price is at 10, I believe somewhere in the next 10 or 20 years, those prices will be seen as ridiculous fire sale prices. Mm-hmm. So I don't got the bottom. But everybody remember this. Because when prices are at 50 or 60 or 70 or 100, I can again tell you why I think they're going there. But when they're at those prices, no one's going to remember that I thought it was a good time to buy now. Hmm. They'll just remember me as some silver hater or something like that, I guess.
Hey, Will, you were spot on when you said to sell. So this could be another great call. But again, timing, we don't know. But we're close.
Well, I don't know that I was spot on. And I mean, I was selling in every 15 to 20% higher for 25 points. So I never got the top. And there are people out there that have actually written very kind words about me that I got the top or something. That's not true. The last silver that I sold at 45 and a half. The first silver I sold at 22 and a half. And I took 10% out of my quote stack every 15 or 20% higher. So I had a vision of where I wanted to be. I had been buying since 1999. And once I got to a certain point, I went into a very robotic system of selling. And thank goodness I did. If I had not, I'm being just as candid as I can be, I might not have been able to pay house notes or feed my kids. So thankfully, I made a move that made sense, logical and rational sense. But anyone who claims I got the top, it never actually listened to me. And anyone who thinks I'm trying to get the bottom isn't listening. I just think there are times you want to move in and times you want to move out. Be balanced about it. Don't push all your chips in the middle and look at the long term. I mean, the long term, and again, you haven't asked me this. If you want me to, I can explain it. But I think the long term for precious metals is first dark and then spectacularly bright.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there's windows. I guess there's not particular points. There's windows of opportunity on the upside and the downside. That's what you have to know. Anyway, Don, it's really been great to catching up with you. It's been a while. And hey, we'll touch base next 60 days or so and see where this crazy market is headed to next.
All right. Well, in the next 60 days, I don't know that much will happen. But and I also don't know that my opinion is worth too much. I know that when your producer got in touch with me, I sort of thought maybe she had the wrong guy. I said, not quite sure that my opinion's valid. And I'll tell you, it never seemed valid in the past, and it seems less relevant anymore. But if it is relevant to anybody, I would say, please look at the cycles of interest rates versus assets. And I know that people have a very hard time wrapping their mind around this. But if they begin to raise interest rates, it is my belief that interest rates rising we'll see the greatest move we've ever seen in asset prices outside of Bitcoins. I think that with interest rates rising, and again, this is actually a more exciting story to talk about, and I guess we don't have time for it now, but the rates rising, when you see rates rising, or when I see rates rising, I will begin an asset purchase program like I've never done, because that, my friend, will be the mark of the next zany, crazy upward push, in my opinion, and that's when you're going to get your inflation. I know that sounds counterintuitive, but...
I totally get what you're saying, man. I know, because then the banks start lending, and the banks are holding trillions of dollars on deposit with the Fed to get their 25 basis points. So when rates go up and they can get more, then they're going to flood the system and velocity of money go up and et cetera.
That's right. There's a story that's going around right now, which you see, I see this with a lot of frequency, where people say, well, they can't. They can't raise rates. They will never raise rates. It's impossible to raise rates. This time is different, et cetera. And I'm telling you, it is not going to be different for the very reason that you keep hearing. Everyone says they can't. Well, trust me, yeah, they can. And when people say it'll hurt the economy, I scratch my head and go, what part of this do you think that they're trying to help the economy? Why do you think they're trying to help anything? But beyond that, when you look, and please, anybody listening, just ignore everything I've said to this point and go research money zero maturity.
Don, thanks. We'll talk to you again soon.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.